Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. My guest in this episode is the captain of the Perth Glory women's side. Grew up in a small town in the southwest of WA. You might have heard of it, Margaret River. And fell in love with the game at an early age. But being a small town, she didn't have a girls' team to go and play with, so had to go and play with the lads. And maybe that's what toughened her up to go on to become not just captain of the Perth Glory, but also having to take the reins from the superstar Sam Kerr, who departed our shores a few years ago now to go and make her way in England at Chelsea. Off the field, she also does plenty of things that I'm looking forward to hearing all about, including working at a women's prison. So let's say hello and welcome to Natasha Rigby. Hello, Tash. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Going all right, thanks. Let's start at the present. You know, you've got a new season on the horizon. How's that going with COVID? I know your coach is stranded in New South Wales and God knows when that situation is going to resolve. How is it all going for you trying to manage a team and manage pre-season and all of that? What with all of this going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So it has been a little bit tricky to navigate. We are heading into the new season and we have actually almost signed a full team already, which is really, really exciting for us. Mm. So we've prepared really, really early and we've got some incredible new signings coming in from over East and locally as well.
Yeah, that's great. Because I know in the last couple of years particularly, with restrictions on getting people physically here from other parts of, let alone other parts of the world, other parts of Australia, just building a team, you kind of had to go back to let's keep it local, right?
100%. And I think we had such a struggle last year because we weren't even sure if Perth was going to be included in the W League season because it was in the middle of COVID and there was so much going on and we didn't know. I think it was maybe 2 weeks out of pre-season that we were actually notified that we were going ahead. Mm. And so we had to really pull a team together at the last minute, which was amazing. And we were able to give the opportunity to a few of our local girls to debut in the W League, which was absolutely amazing. But it does feel a little better this year, being a little bit more prepared.
Yeah.
And even though there is a bit of uncertainty heading into the season, at least we do have all our girls locked in with a few more to come. Alex is stuck in Sydney at the moment, but I think he's working very hard to get over here. We obviously had a new coach last season as well when Alex is heading into his second season now. So it's been a very interesting journey, but he's been nothing but like phenomenal the entire time. So I'm so excited to step into another season with him.
So is he able to give you instructions or guidance, you know, over Zoom or Skype or whatever?
So we're actually out of season at the moment. Yeah. So we are all either playing in the State League, the WNPL, or at the moment I'm just training with our Boys Academy team. And so he's been giving us instruction in regards to how many sessions he wants us doing, where we need to be at fitness-wise, strength-wise, which is awesome. And then once we head into our pre-season, which does start in October, he will be here and be able to give in-person instructions. So it'll be much better then.
And for the captain as well, I mean, maybe even more on your shoulders with people having to deal with so much uncertainty around them, as well as, you know, just the logistics of getting your team around. That's a lot on the captain's shoulders.
Yeah, and I feel like coming off the back of last season, it was a very tough season for us. We did have, like I said, very little time to prepare, and we did get a really, really tough draw as well. I think we spent a number of weeks away at times, and we had about a 5-week period in the middle of the season where we didn't even get to play. So keeping the morale up and keeping the energy and the kind of the momentum rolling at times like that was really tricky, and it required a lot of team bonding and a lot of passion from everyone to keep us on track.
Taking over the captaincy from Sam Kerr, obviously, you know, it was a few years ago now, but tell me about stepping up to that role.
Yeah, that was...
Just go back to that moment in time when, you know, I mean, obviously you would have had an inkling that she was going to be, you know, lured abroad.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a big void there, you know, person of her caliber leaving the team. But stepping into her shoes as the captain of the Glory women's side.
Yeah.
I mean, a big honour, but also a big role.
Yeah? A very big role. And I still right now have butterflies and goosebumps with you even recounting that. Yeah, it was really an amazing time in my life, and I still pinch myself every day. And my journey has been not the usual journey. And so to be given the honour to be able to captain was, it was just like a dream to me. And like you said, taking over from someone of Sam's caliber was very, very daunting. And I felt like I'll be completely honest with you, when I was given and awarded the captaincy, I was so incredibly intimidated, and I was nervous. I was so incredibly excited, but there were all these other mixed emotions, like, I'm not ready for this, I'm not prepared, I don't. And I feel like at times I almost felt like Googling, like, what makes a good captain? Like, even though I...
Leadership qualities.
Correct. So even though I'd been a captain before in previous teams, I was really questioning myself and questioning my abilities. I think it kind of falls back to almost imposter syndrome. Like, I'm not good enough for this. I'm not prepared enough. What I started doing was I just started talking to the people that surrounded me, like my teammates and my friends, my family, and they kept reassuring me, no, like, what you're already doing is why you were selected to be the captain. The qualities and those kind of the values that you hold dear to you are what has kind of given you this opportunity. And that really helped me in identifying my strengths and understanding, okay, no, these are the reasons that I have been selected, and then really focusing in on them, harnessing them and using them to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
So things like I think I'm quite a positive person, and I'm quite an approachable person, and I'm quite passionate about speaking on the behalf of the girls and fighting for what they believe in and being that kind of voice. And I think that's why I was so lucky, and I feel still so honoured to be able to be given that opportunity, and I don't take it lightly. So yeah, it was massive. It was a big moment for me, and I'm still learning every single day, and I feel, I'm just excited to take on this new season.
I want to talk to you about the very early days, you know, growing up in Margaret River. Predominantly a footy town, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Where did the love of soccer, I want to call it football, but where did the love of soccer start?
Well, actually started trying to fill time between when I couldn't surf.
Right.
So we grew up literally like sandy-toed children, little scallywag rascals running around the beach and surfing every second that we could. And then when winter hit, there are some amazing waves in winter, but as a kid we were a little bit sooky. Yeah. And so it wouldn't always be the best time for us. So I think between that time, Mum was kind of like, oh my God, girl, you need to like burn this energy off somewhere. And she kind of just chucked me into soccer with a few other girls. And so I started playing, and I fell in love with it the moment I started. I absolutely adored it.
So there was no family, like your parents weren't into it. It was just something literally for you to go on.
Isn't that so weird?
Chew up some energy.
Yeah, legit.
And you do have a lot of energy, it says.
I do.
Yeah. I can understand Mum wanting to do that.
Sometimes can't get to sleep. But no, exactly. It's funny because a lot of football, soccer families have deep rooted connections within the game.
Yeah.
And that's why they're so loyal to it and they put their kids in. But yeah, I think it was just like, it just was kind of right place, right time for me. And yeah, I've never looked back since. It's just amazing.
All right. That's a nice moment for us to take a break. But we'll pick up from that right after we hear these messages from our sponsors. This is Inspiring Stories. Natasha Rigby is our special guest. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. We are hearing the inspiring story of the Perth Glory women's captain, Natasha Rigby. Tash, so how old were you when your mum decided to keep you occupied for a couple of hours throw you into this game of soccer?
Yeah.
In little old Margaret River.
I think I was about 9 years old.
Which is quite late to start, isn't it, for someone who's gone on to play at a professional level?
100%. You usually hear, like, a lot of my other teammates, like, I was, yeah, kicking a ball before I could crawl. Mm. And so, yeah, it is in the scheme of things quite advanced.
Yeah. Mm. When did you love it to the point where you thought, I really, really want to do this more and more and maybe even one day, you know, play at the highest level?
Well, I was in love with it since I started, but the time that I started to really actually enjoy my football and really start to kind of finesse and try to be a lot better and strive to the best I could be was when it's so cute, we used to go to this, and it still runs, it's called Country Week. We used to go to this camp and all the country kids from across WA would travel to Perth and play against each other in a series of round robin games. And we used to go up and have the absolute best time there. And it was so much fun. And I was lucky enough to be identified by a Football West representative. And I was asked to go to Country Camp,
yep.
Which is where the best of the best of Country Week get selected. And then they get to trial to maybe go to the national competition for our youth. So it's in Coffs Harbour. And I was, like, so honoured to even be asked to go to country camp. I was like, oh, my goodness, the most amazing opportunity. And I was so nervous because I didn't know anyone and I somehow was identified. And so mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to represent WA from the ages of 15 to 17.
Yep.
And play over in Coffs Harbour. And I was given that amazing opportunity and kind of opened my eyes to, oh, there may be a future in this. And that's when I really started to push and train a little bit harder. But, yeah, then I kind of dropped off after that. I kept playing.
Yeah.
But I didn't – being in a country town, there weren't really any more other development pathways.
And you'd sort of gone as far as you could.
Correct.
At that point. Yeah.
At that age, yeah. And being in Margaret River, I was so thankful to my parents. They've been an amazing part of my journey because they did drive me to Perth every three times every week.
Oh, they would
from
have.
Mugs.
Three times a week.
I know.
Three times a week.
I can't even believe it.
Wow.
No. I'm like, guys, what are you doing? The poor things, they chucked me into soccer and they're like, look what it's done.
That backfired on mum big time, didn't it? Wow, that's a lot of miles on the road.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be where I am without them. So thankful to them. But, yeah, and then after that, I guess I moved up to Perth to study, to go to UWA and study sports science. And I was just playing in the state league and really enjoying, like, playing up here. And then, yeah, it kind of got a bit of momentum.
Just went from there. Your poor mum and dad. What do mum and dad do? I mean, were they football nuts in any way, shape, or form?
No. So dad was just working in tourism. So he was as a marketing manager, and mum was working in a Cellador, classic Margaret River.
You had this idyllic Margaret River lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, surfing all the time, a couple of little grommets.
Yep.
Running around in the sand.
So good.
Working at a winery, working in tourism.
Yep, exactly.
What have you done to them?
I know. I know. Sorry, guys. We did have, it was such an amazing childhood growing up in my
Yeah.
life. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about, I mean, your heroes of the game?
Mm.
You know, did you have any posters on the wall of anyone in particular? Were there players? Because, I mean, I suppose for the last 10, 20 years, you have been able to watch hours and hours of it on TV, unlike when I was your age growing up and also loving the sport, Tash. But were there particular players you thought, gee, I'd love to, you know, emulate their style in some way?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring that up because I feel like growing up as a child, we didn't really have that many female role models in the game. And I think now when you look at the Matildas and you look at these incredible players like Sammy Kerr, yeah, Ellie Carpenter, Lana Kennedy, Kaya Simon, these phenomenal women that are so much in the limelight now, and you can't see what you can't be. So growing up, I was just enjoying it. I absolutely loved it. But we watched the Socceroos and I was a big fan of Timmy Cahill growing up, but we really, that was the only thing that I was exposed to. So it really warms my heart now to be able to see so many young women looking up to their idols and being able to see them and be able to aspire to those dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the time that that you came through the ranks in Margaret River, I'm guessing mum and dad still live down there, do they?
They've moved up now.
Have they?
Yes.
Wow, you really have torn their lifestyle apart, haven't you? The way that the sport has grown, because it is such a huge sport, particularly at junior level, but for the girls as well, has it really exploded, you know, down in your old hometown?
Definitely, and they have a girls team now.
There you go.
Which is absolutely amazing. And they have an academy down south too, an all-girls academy, which is, it's so exciting, because when we were coming through, we had to play in the boys' academy, which was so much fun, and like, it definitely taught me a lot about resilience and it made me the player I am today. But to be able to give those girls the opportunity growing up is just amazing.
Not that I want to, you know, start any kind of battle of the codes here, but the AFL women's comp has probably had more resources pumped into it than women's soccer. There have been a few code hoppers over the years. Was there any temptation or any attempt to lure you to the, let's call it, the dark side?
The dark side. It's very interesting that you bring it up, because my partner actually plays for AFLW, and she was playing for Glory.
She tries every day. Yes.
Yeah, so
you just did the switcheroo.
Yeah. she was actually, we played one season of Glory together, and then she was drafted as a rookie to Fremantle, and so now plays over there. And she is my biggest inspiration. She's absolutely amazing. But you're right, there has been an amazing amount of money and support poured into the AFLW, and it makes me so happy, because I feel like it's actually pushed a lot of other female sports to step up. Because when the AFLW came in, they kind of set this standard and they really raised the bar as to what female athletes should be expected to, in terms of like salary, in terms of facilities, in terms of just like the professionalism.
Yep.
And you saw after AFLW brought in their league, the W League then worked with the PFA to establish a CBA, which meant that there were minimum standards brought in to the W League and to the women's game. And you saw a massive increase in an amazing increase in what we were then receiving in terms of like financial stability, and in terms of our facilities, and in terms of even medical expectations, things like that. It's been awesome. So I'm so happy and I'm so grateful for the AFLW, because they continue to push everybody else by raising the bar. Yeah.
And have they tried to poach you?
No.
Would you ever be tempted?
No.
I love it. I suppose some of the basic hand-eye coordination and all the leadership skills and your general fitness, I mean, they can to some extent transfer over, can't they?
Definitely. And I have played a few very safe games.
How do you go to, you know, I'm sure there are balls flying around the house.
Definitely. Like,
you know, which ball is it? Is the round ball or the oval shaped ball?
Bit of both. I have played a few very, very social games of AFL, I must admit. I played a few years ago in a social league. Absolutely love it. We won a premiership. It was amazing. But it's just a lot. I've really enjoyed it. I actually was asked to choose when I was growing up between the two, and I did choose soccer, and I'll never look back, but I have a great appreciation for it as well.
Yeah. Do you think you'll get there in your sport, in the span of your sporting career? Do you think you'll get to the stage where you might be able to just be a full-time athlete?
I don't think so, not in my career. I definitely think it is on the horizon though, for both codes too. Yeah. And I think we were moving in a really good direction prior to COVID.
Yeah.
And there was actually supposed to be like a deal-breaking CBA established, but obviously, you can't predict these things, and it was a little bit of a setback. But I feel like once everything starts to, the dust starts to settle a little bit, and we can kind of harness that momentum again, looking at all the local girls that are in the league at the moment as well, questions need to be asked, because we can't continue on this half and half. Like, I feel like I'm two people. Like, half the year I'm trying to forward my career and be the best that I can be, and I have to maintain that throughout the season as well. But it is difficult, and you look at the product that we're delivering, and you can imagine where that product might be if we were able to dedicate every minute of our lives to simply our sport, rather than working 9 to 5 and then having to recover, train, eat, sleep, wash, do everything in that other little tiny little bit at the end of the day. Yeah.
And speaking of things that you've managed off the field as well, I'm absolutely intrigued by your work at a women's prison.
Yes.
I mean, talk about having two lives.
Yeah.
Captain of the Perth Glory, then working in a women's prison. I'm intrigued to hear the stories and how that managed to work. as best as you could anyway. We'll get into that right after we take a break. This is Inspiring Stories with Natasha Rigby. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest is Natasha Rigby, captain of the Perth Glory women's side and also for a number of years. I know you've just finished up your time there and I'll get you to explain why, Tash, but for some years you've been working at a women's prison. I mean, talk about balancing two pretty heavy tasks here.
Yes, I have been.
Professional sport and working in a women's prison. Firstly, how did that become a thing that you did?
Yes, a quick little story before I get into it. It was so funny. Last season we had a game and I laid out a tackle on a girl and I heard back later on the commentary, one of the commentators was like, after I'd laid the tackle, he was like, and ladies and gentlemen, she works in a women's prison. I'll just leave that there. I was like, come on, guys. Like, what are you doing to me? But
was it a bad tackle, was it?
It was a good question. I would say questionable.
A few months in the slammer for it.
But, yes, no, it was and has been one of the most amazing experiences of my life working there. I was working as a recreation officer, so working to design and develop programs to help rehabilitate and reintegrate the women back into society.
Yeah. So I can see the synergy when you're studying sports science at UWA. You know, that goes together pretty well. So was it that study that you did that led you into doing recreational programs?
Correct.
So at the prison.
Correct. I did do a bit of sport management straight after my degree through local government and state government. And then through working in the state government, it kind of was a stepping stone into this kind of – it's similar work when it comes down to it, just very different
clientele.
You're just
working with some extreme characters.
Correct.
You know, who for whatever reason have found themselves doing time. Now, can you tell us any stories at all?
Not particularly specific.
Without naming names or being detailed in any way?
The reason it was such an amazing experience was that it taught me so much about myself, both professionally and personally, because there are so many women that are in this position purely because of their experience and purely because of things that are beyond their control. So it had taught me a lot about myself and how lucky I am to have grown up where I grew up and received the opportunities I've received, because who knows if I'd been through the exact same experiences some of those women had been through. Like, who's to say that I wouldn't be in their position? So it really taught me a lot about empathy and about understanding and about being grateful for my opportunity. So it was an incredible place to work.
From a fairly, you know, idyllic childhood in Margaret River, though, I mean, when you first entered the prison for your first day at work, was it confronting?
It was daunting, and I think they do test you, particularly when you're new, and they kind of, it's very similar to being a teacher in a way. I have a lot of teacher friends who share very similar stories with me, and I think it's like when you're a relief teacher and a relief teacher walks into a classroom of kids and you just go to town. It's kind of like that.
You smell the fear.
You smell the fear. And so I was like, no fear, no fear, no fear. So trying to be I think what made me a good candidate for the role is I do kind of wear my heart on my sleeve, and if they scream at me, I scream back at them. I give it right back, and I have like a kind of energy and enthusiasm that they enjoy, and I take no prisoners. So I really try and be like firm but fair. So it was very scary walking in, but I think I have the right temperament for it.
How long did it take you to win them over, if I can put it that way?
Quite a few months, I guess.
Because
you have a lot of different, we run a lot of different programs from anything from trauma-informed yoga to art therapy. So a lot of different women come in and out of those courses. So you're not seeing the same women every day, and they run in 6-week blocks. So you are exposed to a lot of different women that are interested in a lot of different things. And so establishing and building that rapport takes quite a while.
The reaction you get from people, you know, when they find that out.
Yeah.
Some people have a fairly well, I suppose, a deep-seated, I don't want to say a prejudice, but a deep-seated view on people who find themselves incarcerated, and it's hard to shake them from that.
Correct.
And that can be very black and white, very blinkered, and maybe don't want to see the human. They just see a criminal.
Yes, exactly. When
you were telling your stories to people and say, hey, I work in a prison, were you able to shift them in any way, do you think? And was that something that you, I suppose, got some sense of reward out of being able to do, to actually kind of humanize people to some degree?
I think that's such a good point, because you're right. People are usually like really shocked and or really interested and want to know more. And so you're right. Like, and I'm guilty of that myself. Without even stepping foot in a prison, I already have a stigma and stereotypes in my mind before I step in there. And I guess that's where it came back to. When I did step foot in there and begin to understand these women that I was working with and the trauma and how it affects people, and then you become more empathetic and understanding, and it really changes your view. And I think talking to people and sharing my experiences has done that, I hope.
Yeah.
But there are some people that will still just stick to their guns.
So what? Tell me what an average day was like. What were you doing with the ladies in there?
Yeah, so we run a number of programs during the day. There's probably about 3 sessions, and we would put on, like I said, for example, we would have maybe like an exercise session in the morning. We would run that. Then we have like a library as well. We'll run that. We have an art room. And then we have a number of different external facilitators that will come in and run things like, they'll run like yoga and other recreational activities that you can think of. So it's facilitating that, but there is a lot of behavior management that comes back to the teaching as well, and understanding how to deal with those situations. And you do find yourself in a few confronting and sticky situations, and learning how to navigate.
Can you share any of this?
Oh, man, there was one where there was just like a volleyball game, and there were just two pretty intense teams that maybe had a bit of history, and we had to break up a fight in there, and it was quite intimidating because there were two large groups and trying to then navigate that. And that's where I guess my loud voice comes into play, and like using my confrontation, like management skills, but nothing can really prepare you for that. So interesting.
Orange is the New Black is a pretty popular TV show, and I think that maybe captures the intrigue of what to most people is a fairly, you know, bizarre environment to be. Was it anything like that?
Yes. Yes. There are some yes and no. Like, it's very Americanized, Orange is the New Black. But there are obviously different relationships.
Is it quite tribal in there?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yep. And you learn, there's like a few queens and a few like head honchos as well.
Yeah, people you don't mess with.
A lot of different dynamics, that go on in there. And so, it is interesting when you first walk in and you're like, whoa, there's like a big web to kind of work your way through. Yeah. So,
And did you have to navigate your way through that, or could you, in your position, you didn't really have to worry yourself with the internal politics of the
not too much for me. We would leave that up to the officers, falls down to them and their managers.
So going from there, because I imagine that probably hardened you up in a way.
In a way. Or softened me in another way.
Or softened you. maybe a bit of both.
Yeah.
Both. Gave you a broader perspective on life and the challenges that some people face. Going from, the women's prison then to the training track.
Yeah.
Did you sometimes have to switch modes, or did you find yourself yelling at your teammates in the way that you might have yelled at someone inside?
No, you're right. A very good point. I struggled some days, and last season was fairly difficult because it is 10-hour days as well. So it's quite – and when you step in there, it's like you're in a bubble. And so you almost have a different persona. And then stepping out of that, it required me to be able to switch off and learn to do that very quickly. So I didn't take that onto the training field, you're right. But it's interesting that you say that, because I was finding – I did a bit of analysing with my psychologist last year, and I was like, I'm spending like I spend 10 hours a day with like 250 women, and then I go to training for 3 hours after that and spend like very intense time with 25 women, and then I go home to a house of 5 women that I live with. I'm like, help me. Like, someone help. It was just like a lot of emotions and a lot of like relationships, and like I am so grateful for it, but I just felt at times, oh my gosh, I am just exhausted. Yeah, crazy.
And I suppose in some of those scenarios, you're kind of having to lead them or order them around.
Correct.
Or discipline them, or, you know,
Yeah, and manage.
Dish out the rules.
Yeah, different personalities and like, yeah, understand different dynamics. So it's really helped me to like grow and learn. And it's, oh my God, been an amazing opportunity. But yes, it was challenging at times.
I bet. Now, for one reason or another, well, maybe you can enlighten us, you've had to finish up your time at the women's prison. Why
is
that?
I've done my time.
You've done your time. You're on parole. Or day release, at least.
Well, coming to see you.
How come? Why did you finish up? Because it seems like you found it a genuinely rewarding experience.
I definitely did, but I think it was, in the end, it just proved a little bit too hard in terms of balancing, getting my work-life balance, training-life balance, because I was required to work on weekends and playing on the weekend, as you can understand, traveling over every second weekend, which is about 3 days, it ended up just being a little bit too much in terms of my ability to commit. And so I didn't want to let them down anymore. And so I just said, look, I'll step away for now. But who's to say I won't go back into that?
Would you go back?
Definitely. I would. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely.
Why is that?
Well, I think it's opened my eyes a lot in terms of my appreciation for psychologists and counsellors as well, and the effect that they can have. And I think if I was to step back into like corrections with the Department of Justice, it would maybe be in that realm, because I feel like that's where I could make the most difference in terms of aiding these women with strategies and tools to be able to then move forward and change their behaviour.
Yeah. I'm sure you picked up a few Perth Glory fans in there too on the way.
I definitely did.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Miss, when's your game on? Miss, what channel? I was like, oh, my gosh, okay.
Would they be able to ever see you?
Yeah.
So, I suppose it was a way that you could connect with them then.
Definitely, yeah. And I kind of got that respect from them in that way as well, which is good. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Anyway, look forward to seeing whether you do go back there and in what capacity. But we need to take a break.
Okay.
This is Inspiring Stories. Tash Rigby is our special guest. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Natasha Rigby, captain of the Perth Glory and former staff member at the Bandyup Women's Prison, which we've been hearing all about. Let's get back to the round ball, though, shall we? We haven't sort of spoken for a bit about how you came onto the radar of Perth Glory, you know, your junior days, Margaret River, and then, you know, all those trips up to Perth. But how did you finally make the cut with Perth Glory?
Yeah, so it's such an interesting story. So I was studying at UWA, studying sports science, absolutely loving it, and just playing in the state league at the time. And I never even considered like being eligible or being given the opportunity to even represent Glory. And so I was so lucky when I was identified to play in a game against Perth Glory. So how it all came about, because I was 22 when I was selected to play for Glory, which is old in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
Like, I know people be like, what do you mean? But it is. Like, usually our girls coming in now are 16, 17.
Yeah.
So in the grand scheme, I'd already gotten my degree and I was on my way to establishing a career. And so I was asked to play against Glory in a showcase match and represent like a state all-stars team for WA. And I was just so honoured to even be selected for that. I was like, oh my gosh, like crying because of that. Didn't even start. Like, I started on the bench. The coach at the time turned around and was like, who wants to go on as number 6, which is midfield? And I have no idea about that. And I was like, me, I'll do it. And so I went on. I played okay. Then I got put into my position, which is right back in the second half. And I played quite a good game.
Yeah.
And we won. We somehow beat the Glory. So it was like really a really strange thing. It was amazing. I was so honoured. Then about 2 weeks later, I got a call from an unknown number. And I was like, oh, who's this? And I picked up. Was the coach, the assistant coach at the time. And she was like, come on down, try out for Glory. Like, the coach wants to see you. And I literally, like, started crying on the phone, screaming.
Did you think it was legit straight away?
I thought it was my friend. Yeah. I thought it was my friend pranking me. I was literally like, Kiz, is this you? Yeah. Like, now is this you? Then just saying it was no, like, this is 100%.
Wow.
Like, calm down. So for me, at that point, Sam Kerr was captaining. There are some very high caliber players in the team. And that was just to me like, oh my goodness, like, okay, I'm doing this. And so it was just a trial, 2 weeks, full training, so 5 sessions a week.
Yeah.
I gave it my absolute best. And at the end of it, Bobby was the coach at the time.
Yeah.
Absolute madman.
Bobby Tan.
Love him.
Yeah.
Love him. He came up to me and he was like, and I was just like so nervous. And he was like, no, Dash. And I was like, yes. And he was like, struggling for words a little bit. And so I just said, Bobby, it's fine. Like, I'm so grateful for the opportunity. Thank you so much. Anyway, like, I really appreciate it. And he was like, yeah, what do you mean? Shut up. You got contract. You got contract. And I was like, what?
You do a brilliant Bobby impersonation, by the way.
I think he'd
even be chuffed with that.
And then I was just like, oh, my goodness, like bawling my eyes out, so happy, like overwhelmed, couldn't believe it. Called my coach at the time for State League. Everyone was just like so like enthralled for me, and I did not think I would play a minute. And then first game I was lucky enough to play 10 minutes. Second game I played 30, and since then I've played every game.
That's
so
amazing.
I haven't missed a game. I think I broke like PFA record for like most consecutive games played in the W League, which was like amazing. Yeah, so I've been incredibly lucky in terms of my journey and in terms of my opportunities and not getting injured as well. I've been able to see those games through, but I think I'm up to my like 70th something game now. So it's been awesome.
What a ride.
I know.
A latecomer.
Yeah.
A chance game against the Glory, and then
crazy
years on, you become the captain. What did you know of Bobby Despotovsky when you were growing up?
Oh, just that I did know about Bobs and the legend. He was just a legend. He's a club legend. He still is. He's just, I just remember him, and he had that spark and that flair. Yeah. Similar to Sammy, you know, it's something that you can't teach. It's just that like incredible natural ability.
I was going to say, what was it like playing with Sam Kerr? I mean, we talk about superstars and, you know, just what was it about her? Did she just see things before others, or, you know, was it her physical ability? Mm. What was it? Did she just have an eye, or what was the quality that made her shine, do you think?
She's just got like this explosiveness. She's like a firework.
Yeah.
That's like the best way to describe her. Like, she, you get her the ball and she will do something phenomenal with it. Mm. Like, she's just fantastic. And I think, like I said, she has that something that the best players in the world have, that little like
sprinkle. It's hard to describe, isn't
it? It's fairy dust. Yeah. It's like they've just like got this little like, oh, I don't know. It's amazing. And not only is she such an incredible player, but just such a great person.
Yeah.
Such a great person.
Yeah.
So filled with such humility and kindness as well, and just led by example. I learned so much under her, and I think that's what kind of gave me the opportunity to then step up.
And of course, with Sam and the team, you made it to a grand final.
Two
grand finals.
Yeah.
Don't want to dwell on them, but didn't work out.
Didn't work out.
How did you guys take that?
It was heartbreaking, but the experience of playing in a grand final is just something that you can't even describe. It was just amazing to be able to play in front of, and at home as well, in front of our home crowd. But, it was sad.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Extra motivation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So looking to the season ahead now, obviously there's still so much uncertainty around COVID and travel and all of that. Is it hard to get the team to really focus on it when there is all of that doubt?
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult, but it's nothing we haven't been and dealt with before. Like, I feel like we went through everything we possibly could last season, so we are absolutely prepared for anything. And I think Glory and Alex have done such a great job in ensuring that we are prepared early, and we are already working on our team mantras and our vision heading forward, and it is focused around our ability to be resilient and to keep going even when times are tough. So it's exciting with all the new players that we have stepping up. We had a couple of girls debut last year, our young Matildas, who got the opportunity to play in the W League, which is, it's just so heartwarming to be a part of that and to watch them come through. And I've played with some of these girls for 5 years, and to see them be a train on and then step into the squad and then step onto the field, it's such a nice feeling to see the local talent especially really prosper.
Yeah. And for you personally, obviously you're captaining the side going into another season fairly soon, and all going well, you know, it'll roll out as planned. What about beyond glory beyond soccer for you?
Yeah.
What are your aspirations and goals beyond that?
Yeah, so I think I'm coming to the end of my footballing career.
Do you feel like it's coming?
Yes, but I'm also just taking every moment as it comes. Yeah. Just because my knees are not the kindest of people, so they're a little bit crunchy. I was doing a squat yesterday and it sounded like there was some marbles in there, so I don't know about that. But yeah, I think looking forward, as I touched on before, I'm really inspired by the work that psychologists do, and I am looking in the future to maybe move into some further study in that field because I am so passionate about that and about how they've helped me along my journey as well. And I think there isn't enough emphasis on the importance of psychologists in sport as well, because like we see it all through the Olympics at the moment, and it's been at the forefront of the media for quite a while now. People struggling with their mental health and stepping away and that being okay and being open and honest about that is so important, and really encouraging that transparency and giving these athletes the support that they need to be the best they can be, because they push so hard every single day physically and mentally, and then they have these external pressures. Like we see Naomi Osaka, the journey that she's had, and she was an overnight sensation. So to have that media, like, you can't be prepared for that.
No.
So I feel like, I would be so interested in stepping into that field where I can help athletes and others in any way I can.
And yet she's copped flack from some, hasn't she?
Oh, it's just astounding to me though. You try and do that. Like those people, I'm like, come on. Anyway, frustrating.
It is a different, that sort of rarefied air that elite sports people occupy, though, the pressures.
100%.
It's almost unique, isn't it?
Yes.
The circumstances that they face. Is it, what particularly about that area of psychology interests you? I suppose you've had a taste of what that's like being in that in that company.
Yeah, I'm so interested in sports psychology, and in terms of
in terms of managing mental welfare generally, or getting the best out of them in a sporting sense.
And you can have that without working through all of your other internal battles. And like you say, it's like they have to fight this internal battle and these internal pressures, and then they have all these external pressures that no other, if you think about really, like apart from like your superstars, your pop stars, like musicians, famous musicians, who has to deal with like that kind of elite performance and then the kind of pressure you get from the media and the world watching.
Bloody media. That's probably a nice note to end on. It. Don't end up in the media, Tash. No, you're better than that.
Heed my warning.
But thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. Good luck with the season ahead of you. Hope it all goes beautifully and you pick up some wins along the way.
Thank you.
Maybe even a maiden title for the Perth Glory women's side. That would be amazing.
Amazing. Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.